And so it happens that I come to be the panhandler myself, because all will serve. All will make this dramatic, stylized request for money, and, indeed, you're fucking right, I do say something like this. Never think it won't happen to you. Such a downer. I should really purge it from the script, except there's no script. There are only certain routines that I fall back on because they're written into my 5-year plan. My daughter and me, we got nowhere to go. And sometimes I say, we're really sorry to interrupt your reading. Though most everyone is tranquilized by video games. It's not that I want to be irritating. It's that I'm exhausted. Never meant to come to this. We were just minding our own business. And I'm holding her hands in that really uncomfortable way that you have to hold a toddler so that she can toddle without falling over. And actually, I do this, even though she could probably do it herself now, but she looks more pitiable like this. Doesn't matter what I say. It matters that I'm married, once had a good job, and like to smoke Latin American plant residues. You would not expect me to be wearing the homely knockoff sneakers from a charitable agency, and so I'm carrying my daughter and using my daughter and my misfortune to chisel you. Everything that you have was given to you by chance, and this accounts for all of it. Sofa and television, stuff in cabinet, fancy crockware that you fetch down from the high shelf for company, and if you have a car, if you're lucky enough to have a car, this car was given to you by chance and not because you deserve it, and the same goes for every bit of real estate in your real estate portfolio. Just the mere idea of real estate ownership is indefensible. You have done nothing to deserve ownership of a real estate portfolio. And since that's the case, you should think about giving some of what you have to myself and my daughter. We're going to proceed through this car so slowly that it'll seem we shall never leave. And we'll be glad to take some of your disbursements, which we think of not as redistribution, but rather as an atonement for the fact that you deserve nothing that you own. Jewelry is especially welcome here, so if some of you women have rings that you're trying not to sport here on the train, this might be a good time for you to hand over some of these jewels. Because in any event, you are living with the fear that the jewelry will somehow be separated from you because you recognize that you do not deserve the jewelry, and we can help you with that. Now would be a good time to hand it over. And what about all you persons with gold teeth? You've been spending all this money on your teeth, trying to have a smile that reflects how you feel about yourself, that you are golden. But now you have an opportunity to indicate by allowing us to extract your golden teeth and melt down these veneers and monetize them, that you are willing to give abundantly to the starveling children of distant lands. And while it's true that we are not the starveling children of distant lands, it would be wise for you to hand over some of your accursed ingatherings. I'm also thinking about your credit and debit cards. A great many of you will have more than one credit or debit card issued by a recently bailed out financial services corporation just because you're worried about running up one credit card to its limit. And so you keep other cards in reserve for emergencies, and well, here we are. We're an emergency, and you ought not refuse our emergency. And so we would be happy to borrow your credit cards from you for a limited time. And we have some of those fancy devices that they have in Europe where you can debit the funds on the run. And so we'd be happy to borrow the card from you for a brief moment and to make a deduction on behalf of ourselves. And what about the rest of you? We offer other financial transactions. For example, we can store your loose change, since change is heavy and can really pile up, especially pennies. We can take this change from you because it's a choking hazard for my daughter. Oh, and because it's a choking hazard for my daughter, she is carrying this attractive commemorative jar. A jar that invokes this day on which we came around on the trains to help you with your remorse. And into this commemorative jar, my daughter would be happy to ingather all such change as is weighing down your trousers or purse. We'd be happy to give you a full accounting of all the expenses on which my daughter spends your change. We are also particularly happy to take larger denominations, some of those dollar coins that people mistake for quarters, impractical and best given away, or foreign currencies. And if you've already disbursed your change, and if you have no jewelry, and your teeth are all repaired with porcelain or some other fill that is unredeemable, we are nonetheless certain that you have stock certificates, or you have a pension plan. And while you cannot cash out your pension plan until you are of retirement age, you can name the two of us, my daughter and me, as beneficiaries of your pension plan, and we'd be happy to help you call the relevant parties, and we will help alert them to the paperwork. And in fact, we also do have a 900 number already engaged. And for each call that you place, 50 cents will be deposited in our account in the Cayman Islands. And if that's easier for you, that would be a fine way to contribute. And so when you think of all the ways, web-based, telephonic, and through simple old-fashioned hand-to-hand transfer that enable you to provide us the necessary funds, I think you have to pause to consider all the good that you will be doing. You could give to your public library or to the museum or perhaps some charity devoted to eliminating disease among children. These charities are admirable, but they are not charities that have anything to do with us. And in any case, with us, you undoubtedly get more bang for your philanthropic buck. With us, you can really make an immediate difference. And if you think that I will stop talking eventually, you have. Guy comes on the train, as if from the storied past of panhandling, silencing the car entire, laying waste to superficial interpretation of the ubiquitous professionals called panhandlers, laying waste to all metaphor, to all who would claim an understanding of the issues, to all who would imagine that they could separate the charlatans from the needy, silencing those who claim that this is fraudulence and hoodwinkery, silence in the car, punctuated by the restful and subsonic frequencies of train motion, all is hushed, arrested. He is from the storied past, from some origin of beseechment, when only the grossest of disfigurement would do the trick. And my daughter is asleep, and I am grateful for her slumbering, because I know that while I grew up on this site, the site of the guy on the skateboard, I would spare her, at least for now. I don't want her to see the horror of the guy on the skateboard and to have to wrestle with the horror while trying to engage with him as though he were an individual instead of a guy who had no lower half of his body and who thus comes through the subway cars fused to his skateboard, beseeching, and who summons, in his inexplicable biology, only thoughts of the extra-large epidemic of sorrow that is urban living. I'm not ready for her yet to see, to feel, the sanding away of innocence that comes from bearing witness thus. Of course, he's collecting from those at the other end of the car first, and there's scarcely a heart hard enough to refuse. And I'm thinking not of how he could be circulating, since he was a figment of my own past, my unprofessional days, my wool-gathering days. How the fuck can he function with no fucking lower torso, even? Does he have a portion of a liver, or a liver and a pancreas? Does he have at least one kidney? Can he do without bladder, transverse colon, lower organs? Can he be attached to various yellowy collection bags with their viscous syrups so that he can easily go without excremental orifices? How is he closed off? With what lacing and interlacing of inventions? And was he always like this, or was he made thus by explosion or accident? And how did he learn to accomplish so much with just his arms? Walk between cars, jam the skateboard under his arm between cars, somehow open the doors, squeeze through, so that he may travel down the length of the next car, separating the fortunate from their gains. What are the absolutely essential parts of the body for a person to feel whole, for a person to feel that he is a person? How much can you cut away from a body before a person is not? And how much money is a lost limb worth, and does this price go up when more limbs are lost? Is it necessarily the case that the guy on the skateboard has someone to look after him, or does he live alone, as he looks like he must do? Because it's so hard to imagine him as a social animal, though he works in a professional space that is all about social interactions. In this case, the turning over of monies to him by persons in the subways of our city. Does he know everything about the subways? Is he one of those guys who could tell you about all the discontinued lines and about all the route changes? I grow more uncomfortable as he makes his way down the car. This is understatement. And partly it's understatement because the guy on the skateboard says nothing. The guy on the skateboard waits, draws himself to a halt in front of various riders. And this is the simple dialect of the encounter. He waits for the fumbling with the billfold, but that is not all, because he's waiting for something else, for his royal flush of disabilities to dawn in the eyes of the other. Yes, I'm a prisoner of my recollections of the guy on the skateboard and of my desire to protect my daughter from the sight of him, and so I'm thinking about how I might get the fuck out of the way of the guy on the skateboard. I am enumerating the options, and yet this set of options is not long because I'm the last in the car. There's no next place to go. In running oppositely away from the guy on the skateboard, I could go around the guy on the skateboard, clutching my daughter to me, but then I would need to recognize him as I pass, as he works his way to a pair of ladies evidently on their way to church, with their bonnets and their Sunday best, and these ladies calmly put aside small Gideon-sized paperbacks, reach into pocketbooks, and how they can do so calmly, I don't know, but they do. And then there's a guy wearing some kind of uniform, maybe a muffler repair franchise, and he has a roll of small bills, and he peels off some bills. And do I detect a certain amount of fear and trembling at the beholding of the guy on the skateboard? No, the muffler repair expert gives nothing away except the bills. And then in silence, the guy on the skateboard approaches that family of four, the father, who seems to watch placidly as his wife wrestles with the two kids, one in a stroller, one without. Who got the first cookie and who got the first turn on the video game? And on it goes, the family of four, until the guy on the skateboard arrives and stands before them. Ecce homo, behold. And the reaction of the father is, what the fuck? fuck do you want? Do you want some kind of fucking money? Can't you see that my family wants to be left in peace? But then the father, on the point of blowing up, takes in the guy on the skateboard, comes to understand this vessel of misfortune, body, no longer a body, and yet still a person. This person fused to some temporary technological solution so that he might still command a certain amount of cash money. And this is what I'm whispering to my daughter as the guy on the skateboard draws closer, because he's completing the transaction with the Hispanic family, and there's a guy just down the bench from me, a white guy wired up to the hilt, stuff stuck in his ears, wires coming out, and he has something in his hand that beeps and vibrates. He has running clothes on and some kind of device strapped onto his arm meant to track systoles and diastoles. He has space-age running shoes and shorts, and he has a number on his chest, which means that he's about to compete. And he's like the guy on the skateboard, a body attached to devices. And I'm whispering to my daughter as the guy with the running clothes reaches into a special little pocket in the tongue of his $300 running shoes and exhumes another dollar or two that he places into the gloved hand of the skateboard guy, who again says nothing. And now there is nothing separating us. Myself and the guy on the skateboard, moments of silence, moments of moments. His silence is historical. And what I think is that there are things that cannot be imagined, but only remembered. And then there are things that cannot be remembered, but only reconstructed. And then there are things that cannot be reconstructed, only dreamed. And then there are things that cannot be dreamed because they represent what is. And the guy on the skateboard, whether living or dead, is what is. And every other living thing out there, on the trains and in the world, thinks that it is what is. But in truth, there's nothing like the guy on the skateboard standing on the subway asking for money. And as he stands before me, I reach into my pocket, and what I say is, "Don't wake her." And then I look into his eyes.